This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I, Adama Barrow.
I, Adama Barrow.
Do swear.
That I will well and truly
execute the functions of the office.
The President of the Republic of the Gambia.
That's Adama Barrow taking the oath of office as the Gambia's new president. Also, troops from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, waiting to military intervention to remove Jammeh if necessary. And Human Rights Watch accuses Burundi's government of refusing to prosecute or rein in the country's ruling youth league, who says are responsible for violence across the country. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Adama Barrow has taken the oath of office as the new president of the Gambia. It happened just over an hour ago at the Gambian embassy in Dakar, Senegal. The oath was administered to Barrow by the head of the Gambian Bar Association, Sharif Tambadu.
I, Adama Barrow. Do swear. That I will well and truly execute the functions of the office.
The President of the Republic of the Gambia.
That I will preserve and defend the Constitution. And that I will do right. To all manner of people. According to law. Without fear or favor.
Affection or ill will.
So help me God.
That was Adama Barrow taking the oath of office earlier today as the new Gambia president. He addressed the Gambian people from Dakar after being sworn in.
Fellow Gambians and friends of the Gambia, I humbly stand before you to address the whole world on this historic occasion. This is a day no Gambian will ever forget in one's lifetime. This is the first time since the Gambia became independence in 1965 that Gambia have changed their government through the ballot box. I must take this opportunity to thank the entire electorate of the Gambia and Gambians in the diaspora for making this day possible. I thank the entire campaign team of the Coalition 2016 and the stakeholders for putting aside their political differences to unite us for national interests. Distinguished ladies and gentlemen, allow me to register special appreciation to Her Excellency Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the President of Liberia, and the chairperson of the Authority of Head of States of ECOWAS, for her personal commitment and tireless efforts towards resolving the political crisis in the Gambia. The same sentiments goes to His Excellency Muhammad Buhari, the President of the Republic of Nigeria. His Excellency Ernest Bai Koroma, the President of the Republic of Sierra Leone, and His Excellency Dramani Mahama, former President of Ghana. I must also express profound gratitude to ECOWAS, AU, the Security Council, the United Nations, and all friendly nations who stood during our time of greatest need. I wish to thank His Excellency Macky Sall, President of the Republic of Senegal, for hosting hospitality accorded to me and my delegation at the request of ECOWAS Chair. This is what it means to be part of a community of democratic nations.
That was Gambia's new president, Adama Barrow, in his inaugural address earlier today. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council is scheduled to meet this hour to vote on a resolution on the Gambia. The resolution endorses the decisions of the Economic Community of West African States and the African Union to support Adama Barrow. The resolution also calls on regional countries and organizations to cooperate with President Barrow in his efforts to realize the transition of power. The UN vote could clear the way for West African troops to enter the Gambia and remove former President Yahya Jammeh if he continues to refuse to relinquish power and step down. His cabinet has resigned and many have fled to other countries. Jammeh has said he would not step down until the Gambian Supreme Court ruled on his challenge of the December 1st election results. He claims there were voting irregularities. Following developments in the Gambia is Pandarian Bai, founder and managing editor of the online Freedom newspaper. He's on the phone with us now from Raleigh, North Carolina. Good evening, Pandari.
Good evening, Kim.
Well, Pandari, what are your sources in the Gambia telling you about the status of Yahya Jammeh?
Jammeh is apparently confused. He doesn't know what is going on. As we speak, President Adama Barrow has been officially inaugurated, and Gambians in the country and outside the country, they are in a jubilant mood. President Jammeh's fate is going to be decided in the next coming hours. There is an imminent threat that ECOWAS will move in and eject Jammeh from power.
There have been numerous reports today that Jammeh might step down. Is there any information that you have that might support that?
Yes, Mr. Jammeh is contemplating stepping. What is happening is some of his loyalists close to him, they don't want Jammeh to leave them behind. As so, Jammeh is somehow confronted in a catch-22 situation.
What do you suppose right now is going through President Barrow's mind as he has sworn in? He's the new president of the Gambia, but yet his predecessor is refusing to step down, at least at this point.
This was echoed in President Barrow's speech. He's increasingly concerned about Jammeh's refusal to relinquish power. He extended an olive branch to the military to consider switching their allegiance to the new administration. Mr. Barrow said his government is going to be an all-inclusive government and Gambians across the board will be treated equally and fairly.
And what is reaction so far from Gambian citizens to the swearing-in?
Well, those in the Gambia, it is a mixed feeling. They are saying that in the Gambia, so that they can grace the occasion together with Mr. Barrow and his transition team, notwithstanding, since Barrow has been inaugurated, they are hopeful that Gambia will finally enjoy democracy, freedom, and justice.
Is there any expectation of violence?
That's the million-dollar question, Kim. People don't know what's going to happen. We are hoping that ECOWAS will manage the crisis with a high degree of responsibility. Keep in mind that the Gambian army is not professional. It is some sort of a militia army. Anything could happen. There are some rogue elements within the army. They might use the situation to vent their anger against folks in the country.
Well, thank you, Pandari. It was good speaking with you again, and you take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kim.
That was Pandari Mbai, founder and managing editor of the online Freedom newspaper. Well, we continue our coverage of the political crisis in the Gambia with a report on what's happening on the border with Senegal. Reporter Ricky Shryak is in the town of Karang on the northern Gambia border. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua earlier today about what's been happening there over the past 2 days.
Well, yesterday we saw quite a few people crossing into the border saying they feared for their safety in Gambia, and so they were coming to Senegal to either stay with family or just rely on the kindness of the Senegalese in this area. There are 3,000 people, the mayor told us, who have either come through this town or staying in this town who have been displaced. There's 26,000 altogether in Senegal, according to the UN, who have already fled the Gambia. There are a lot of displaced here. But now today at the border, the ferry, the boat that takes people out of Banjul to cross the river to get to Senegal, is not working. It's not taking people. So the border is ineffectively kind of deserted right now.
Now, where you are, do you see any evidence of West African troops poised to go into the Gambia?
No, there's no troops visible here. A lot of what we're hearing is that they would come in from the southern side of Gambia, from the southern border, because, well, number one, you wouldn't have to cross the river, I believe, to get into Banjul from that border. But I believe that's where they're supposed to be gathering, is on the southern border of Gambia, in the Casamance region of Senegal.
Were you able to talk to any of the people who left the Gambia to get their views on what's going on?
Yes, I talked to quite a few people. One woman I saw today came into the Red Cross headquarters here crying very profusely. She had come in with 21 children, most of them her grandchildren, so they had nothing to eat. They were scared that there was going to be violence, so they felt they had no choice. 80% of the displaced, according to the UN, are women and children. So a lot of them are leaving because they are fearful that there might be violence, not from the ECOWAS troops, but from maybe Jammeh. The woman was very upset about Jammeh. Most of them are expressing, why can't he leave? We don't understand. Why does this one man have to do this to our country, etc.?
Do you know if any humanitarian agencies are standing by to go into the Gambia or to help those who fled the Gambia?
I know the Red Cross set up a headquarters here in Karang to deal with the displaced, the Senegalese Red Cross. And the UNHCR is working in, or there at least they have some people they sent down to the Casamance region to also deal with the displaced. I don't know about any of them being ready to go into the Gambia as of right now.
That is Ricky Shryock reporting from the Gambia and the Senegal border. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. Meanwhile, UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, says it has emergency plans in place in Senegal to support up to 40,000 Gambian refugees if need be. As reporter Ricky Shryock mentioned, about 26,000 people have fled the country in Senegal in recent days. And also, we just have this late word in. The UN has unanimously approved the resolution that which could clear the way for military intervention to remove Jammeh from office. In a report released today, Human Rights Watch has accused Burundi's government of refusing to prosecute or rein in the ruling party's Youth League, who it says are responsible for violence across the country, as well as setting up unofficial roadblocks in several provinces to harass passersby. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
The name Imbonerakure means those who see far in Kirundi, the primary language of Burundi. But Human Rights Watch says what it sees is the ruling party's Youth League committing atrocities across the country. Leslie Lefko is Deputy Africa Director for Human Rights Watch.
These are very serious allegations, and the cases that we've documented are likely, you know, a fraction of the wider pattern of abuses. It's very clear that Imbonerakure members seem to have almost virtually complete impunity to commit abuses in Burundi at the moment.
HRW says its findings are based on interviews conducted over the past 3 months, in which it documented scores of cases of killings, torture, and severe beatings. Specifically, HRW says Imbonerakure members beat a 15-year-old boy to death with clubs, cut out a man's eye and then stomped him to death, and have attacked people with knives, clubs, and wooden poles, among other abuses. The rights group alleges members have also set up unofficial roadblocks in various provinces to sometimes detain and beat passersby, in addition to stealing money and possessions. Attempts to reach Burundi's presidential, police, and ruling party spokespersons for a response to these allegations were unsuccessful. According to Human Rights Watch, sources say they have lost confidence in the justice system, which they believe cannot help victims and may even be implicated in abuses.
These cases point to a deeper climate of fear. There is a complete loss of confidence in law enforcement, in the judiciary, because people believe that any politically sensitive cases are going to be led by ruling party policy.
HRW is asking authorities to immediately and publicly order Imbonerakure members to stop illegally detaining, ill-treating, and extorting money from the population. It wants the judiciary to investigate and prosecute those responsible for the crimes, and for the government to remove the illegal roadblocks. In addition, HRW is calling for individual targeted sanctions against those responsible for serious human rights violations at the highest levels. Burundi's current crisis began in April 2015, when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced his controversial bid for a third term. A recent report from human rights groups says that more than 1,000 people have died and hundreds have gone missing. The government has announced it will leave the International Criminal Court, while the ICC is still deciding whether to launch a full investigation into alleged atrocities. A European Parliament resolution Thursday called on the UN Security Council and the ICC to quickly open a full investigation. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Well, tomorrow at noon in Washington, D.C., Donald Trump will take the constitutional oath of office and become the 45th president of the United States. While the oath is the legal heart of the inauguration ceremony, the day itself is rich with symbolism and traditions that have come to express American values. To find out more about the ritual elements of tomorrow's events, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with David Phillips, a scholar of ceremony and the author of The Double Eagle and Emblems of the Indian States. He began by explaining just what a presidential inauguration means.
It means that the president has taken the oath of office, which is required by the Constitution. The president actually becomes president automatically at noon on Inauguration Day, but the Constitution requires that he take an oath. And the oath says that he swears that he will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So he's swearing that he will execute the office honorably and under the Constitution.
Tell me a little bit about the American inauguration procedure, shall we say, and what it means in terms of our values as a republic.
Well, the United States has three branches of government: executive, headed by the president, the legislative, which is Congress, and the judicial, headed by the Supreme Court. The ceremony unites all three branches because the president goes to Congress and is sworn in by the Chief Justice. In a way, it's a fusion of all three branches toward the constitutional exercise of the office of president.
I know that prior to his going to the Capitol, where the Congress is, he often meets at the White House with the outgoing president and they ride to the Capitol together. What's that all about? Is that just sort of a nicety or what's the deal?
Well, it's a nicety, but it's a nicety with a symbolic dimension. What it means is that we're peacefully transferring power and that two gentlemen, because they've always been men so far, one is paying a polite call on the other, is given breakfast or some coffee, and then they ride together in the same carriage to the Capitol where the swearing-in is being done. It emphasizes that it's a friendly transfer of power. There's no violence, there's no animosity between the two, even though they may be of differing parties. It's very, very rare that a president doesn't participate in this.
One thing I believe you mentioned to me, you know, offline, is the seeming banality of this transfer. In other words, the elements of the transfer being sort of normal things that normal people do, drop in for a cup of coffee, head over together, but somehow its significance is amplified by the power of the men transferring the power.
Yes, the English constitutional historian Walter Bagehot wrote that a princely marriage was a brilliant addition of a universal fact, and as such, it rivets mankind. It's true he was talking about a royal ceremony, but it works very well in the United States context because the president is sort of like a king in that he is the focus of national identity and the focus of either loyalty or resentment, but is the vehicle for the projection of what people feel and imagine about their country. So what may just be stopped by the House, have a cup of coffee, and we'll ride up together, becomes magnified when it's done in a ritual context like this by the outgoing president and the incoming president. And so what would be an ordinary social ritual for ordinary people becomes a magical ritual when it's done in this context. Another thing I would mention is the ritual salute. When the outgoing president arrives on the platform, the band plays Hail to the Chief, which is the official anthem of the president and marks his arrival because he's still the president. When the new president takes the oath, then The band pays hail to the chief for him. And also a military saluting battery fires a 21-gun salute, which is reserved for the president and is a mark of his rank. It is an official recognition of the fact that the new president has taken office and is to be regarded as the president now.
That was David Phillips, a scholar and the author of The Double Eagle and Emblems of the Indian States. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips via Skype from San Francisco, California. The UN Refugee Agency, International Organization for Migration, and 72 other partners are appealing for a $691 million to implement a new plan to relocate and help ease the plight of tens of thousands of refugees and migrants in Europe this year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the two lead organizations are based.
More than 1.3 million refugees and migrants from Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, the Horn of Africa, and elsewhere have arrived in Europe over the past 2 years. They've met with resistance from European nations reluctant to receive them. Tens of thousands continue to languish in substandard camps and makeshift accommodations with inadequate assistance and little hope for their future. The plan, being launched by the UN Refugee Agency, an international organization for migration, sets out a new strategy to ensure safe access to asylum and protection of these individuals. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Puyi calls this a very pragmatic plan, one that will be reviewed throughout the year and adjusted to the reality on the ground. She tells VOA the plan aims to support long-term solutions and an orderly and dignified way of managing migration.
We've been constantly advocating, for instance, for European countries to offer more legal pathways for refugees and migrants to come to Europe. The reason being that if we don't offer such legal pathways, people resort to human smuggling with the deadly consequences that we've been witnessing over the past 2 years.
The United Nations says some 5,000 people lost their lives in 2016 while making the perilous crossing in flimsy smuggler boats across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. Aid agencies hope to prevent such tragedies from occurring by presenting safer alternatives to refugees and migrants. Puyi says the plan emphasizes the specific needs of refugee and migrant children, as well as those of women and girls. She says efforts will be made to meet the needs of unaccompanied and separated children in Europe, and that more than 25,000 of the children arrived by sea in Italy alone last year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC.
I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans.
On Friday, January 20th, all eyes will be on Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump as the 45th U.S. president. Be a part of history. Join VOA for 2 hours of special live coverage on radio and television and on the internet at voanews.com. So tune in Friday, January 20th, starting at 1600 UTC, right here on VOA.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.